are 6-piece chicken McNuggets made with all white meat chicken for just $2. Get yours now on McDonald's $1, $2, $3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
In America, the zip code you're born into can determine your future. If this baby was born a couple miles away, his chances of dropping out of school skyrocket. Born 5 miles farther, his chances of experiencing violent crime rise. But just one town over, his chances at a healthier life improve. At The Y, our programs help all kids thrive, no matter where they're from. Support your local Y at ymca.net/foreabetterus.
Now, with more clarity, this is Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD Philadelphia. Streaming live at wordradio.com.
Oh, what's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on. There's a lot of chocolate cities around. We've got Newark, we've got Gary. Somebody told me we got L.A. And we're working on Atlanta. But you're the capital, CC.
Daddy knows ya.
Get down.
Daddy knows ya.
Moving in on ya.
Daddy knows ya.
Can't you feel my breath?
Daddy knows ya.
All up around your neck. Hey, CC. They say you jive and game and can't be changed. But on the positive side, you're my piece of the rock and I love you, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule.
But you got Chris Murray. Ah, my producer on the wheels of steel is David Fritz. Thank you, David, for all things you do. Get us, keep this ship running. Now, okay, so it is now 12 noon. I'm expecting my man Brandon Robinson from the Scoop B podcast to kind of call in to talk about some basketball, NBA. James Harden, man, that guy has been on a tear. My goodness, he's been scoring points left and right. Meanwhile, for the Houston Rockets, although we got him here in Philly on Monday, on Martin Luther King Day, the Sixers basically blew out the Rockets, and the Sixers have been playing well. These last two or three games now, they've played against they've played against some contending teams, and I think they're doing well. I mean, I watched the game against San Antonio the other night, a well-coached team. You know, Brett Brown is going against his old mentor, Greg Popovich, and the Sixers were down by 8 with 2 minutes, 48 seconds left in the game. And they somehow found a way to They went on a 10-0 run, played great defense, and got some clutch baskets by J.J. Redick. Boy, I was almost having J.J. Redick. Landry Shamet hit some shots late in that situation. J.J. Redick got fouled on a 4-point play, and they played solid defense down the stretch of that game. They played really good defense, and I thought that that's a good send-off for the Sixers as they go off to play the as they go off tonight. They play a hot Denver Nuggets team, although they lost to Utah on that same night. I was watching the game, and so I think the Sixers are on probably one of the most difficult road trips of the season, and I think that and starting tonight in Denver, that's going to be a tough matchup. And I think at the end of the day, It's going to be interesting to see how the Sixers come out of this. On the line with us is my man, Brandon Robinson from the Scoopy Podcast and Basketball Society. And Brandon, the Golden State Warriors got Boogie Cousins, and they're starting to look a little awesome right now. I don't think anybody is going to catch them. How are they looking? They beat the Washington Wizards. Steph Curry took over that game. You know, how good is this Warriors team now that they have Boogie Cousins in the fold?
I mean, good afternoon, Chris. Basically, when you look at the Warriors, they're a team that had a roster that was potent with stars, and they had to get it all together. Their kryptonite was injuries, and now everybody's back in the new year and has a new focus going into the All-Star break in the next couple of weeks. So when I look at the Golden State Warriors, they are who we thought they'd be. It's just a matter of being consistent and taking that mindset and that excitement and that precision going into the playoffs. But, you know, early in the season, they weren't necessarily they were kind of maybe coasting a little bit, but not coasting in a bad way. The combination of injuries, combination of arguing a little bit, and the combination of just figuring it all out, they seem to have together. I spoke with DeMarcus Cousins before the season, and he said to me, the Warriors are like Play-Doh. You can mold them into whatever you want them to be. And he just marveled at all of the basketball minds and the basketball IQs that are on that team. And he told me he was ready. He was ready to get moving, ready to get started, and you're seeing that now in his return.
Right. So there is anybody in the Western Conference. Denver is at number two if you look at the NBA Western Conference standings. I look at teams like Utah, and, you know, we always talk about the Lakers. I mean, who has the chemistry and who has, you know, the team that can remotely keep up with this team? Last year, Houston took him to Game 7, but, you know, Chris Paul is out. And when's Chris Paul slated to come back? Is he coming back anytime soon, or is this still a work in progress?
I'm hearing that he can come back in the next week, next few days. He's day-to-day right now. But to your first question about who can beat them, I think if the Lakers find a way to coast and not have to meet the Warriors in the early parts of the playoffs, I think they could play them in the Western Conference Finals. Can they beat them? I'm on the fence, but I don't bet against LeBron James. But that injury that he has is definitely cumbersome right now. If you've been paying attention to my Twitter feed, at Scoopy on Twitter, I tweeted on January 11th that, you know, LeBron's groin injury is worse off than people are saying. And I can tell you that I've had a few conversations with some people, and if you look at the Lakers' schedule, they play the Philadelphia 76ers on February 10th. And if LeBron is smart, he sits out the next couple of weeks and plays that February 10th game against the Sixers, which would be a tune-up right before the All-Star game because he wants to play, and then plays the All-Star game and then comes back the second half of the season really moving and grooving. But you know, that groin injury, I spoke to a league source who said that, you know, LeBron could have played that Warriors against the Warriors at that game that they played about a few days ago, but didn't. He's resting. But I definitely think that LeBron James and the Lakers could go toe-to-toe with the Warriors and meet them in the Western Conference Finals.
Talk about how well that team has progressed. I mean, how's Lonzo Ball coming, you know, getting with this team, and how are the rest of the pieces coming together with this team?
I mean, Kyle Kuzma has been a star this season for them. I think if you're looking at somebody not named LeBron James on that Lakers team who's been producing, it's been Kyle Kuzma this season. But Lonzo Ball has held his own. He's hurt right now. He'll be out for a little while with that ankle injury. But I do like Lonzo Ball as a second piece. With LeBron, it's just a matter of staying healthy. Brandon Ingram, at times, has shown flashes of brilliance. And I think defensively, the Lakers have had, you know, the cogs of Tyson Chandler and JaVale McGee who can hold it down. But this Lakers team has had injuries and or suspensions. And you know, mainly Rondo has been hurt, LeBron's been hurt, and now Lonzo Ball. So similarly to the Warriors at the first half of the season, those guys just have to be healthy in order to make things happen. And I think if they get healthy, there'll be something competitive to watch.
Right. How does a team, I mean, you get a guy like LeBron James, it's easy, there's a lot of young players on that team. You talked about Rondo and some other guys, but there's a lot of young players. How do you kind of like just play the game and not just sit back and watch on LeBron? Because it seems like a lot of times when you get a guy like LeBron James, you just kind of sit and just watch what he does and not really participate.
Locally in Philly, you saw with Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
And though his dribble was so breathtaking, you saw guys like Clarence Weatherspoon and Derek Coleman, who I respect both, standing around watching because he had the ball in his hand. I've always said that that LeBron James was a taller Allen Iverson with better court vision, and that, you know, he has to have the ball in his hand in order to produce. And that being said, when you look at LeBron James, a 6'8", man train, 6'8", 260, who can run an offense, who can get to the basket and create his own shot and do a myriad of things. He's excited to watch. But he's not as young as he used to be. He'll be fine. But I do think that LeBron is an excited basketball player to watch. It's interesting when I go to games and watch, since I was a kid, even watching Michael Jordan as having covered the league at a young age and also, you know, and or going as a fan, in the late 90s, I sat and just watched Michael as a kid, and I said, yo, this may be the last few times I get to watch Michael enjoy the moment. I did the same thing with Kobe, watched him play. I remember his last All-Star game, really sat and just enjoyed the moment. And I found myself over the last 5 years doing the same thing with LeBron. Mm-hmm. I think for so much of his career, people have always tried to make comparisons. He's not this, he's not that. And I think the league is going to really miss him when he's no longer playing. And I feel like, you know, people pretended to be so upset that Kobe was gone, but a lot of people bashed him too. You have to appreciate greatness when it's there, because it's not there forever.
That's true. You know, it's a funny thing on the baseball side of it. I couldn't stand Pete Rose as a player, but I had to appreciate the great. It's like Tom Brady, the same thing. You got to appreciate while they're there, because, you know, those are guys with generational players. They come along once in a lifetime. But I want to talk about the Eastern Conference, because I was watching. I tend to watch Stephen A. Smith, who I think is a. Steven's very knowledgeable about basketball. You can say he's a little loud and all that, but Stephen A. knows the stuff about when it comes to basketball. He said that there are two teams in the Eastern Conference. He says that either the Toronto Raptors or the Boston Celtics, although are two teams that are capable of at least taking Golden State to a game 7 and possibly win the series. They didn't say win the series, but he said that either Toronto with Kawhi Leonard Danny Green, all those guys can take, you know, Kyle Lowry, our local kid from Cardinal Doherty, can take,
yes, sir,
can take Golden State or the Celtics, with all the players that they have, with good Lord, why is Kyrie Irving skipping my mind? I'm getting old, man. But the thing is, he says that any of those teams can take him to Game 7. What say you about that?
I think that those are two good teams in the Eastern Conference, but I think people don't give the Milwaukee Bucks enough credit.
Yeah. I would say so. And what about the Sixers? Can we give the Sixers credit in there? Or are the Sixers still missing something?
I think the Sixers have a good team on paper. I think that the Sixers are still adjusting to Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid all on the same team.
Okay. Yeah, he's out with a wrist injury. They're taking a look at it. They have him for questionable for tonight. I don't think he's going to play in tonight's game.
Questionable means 25% likely, so he probably will not play tonight.
Right. But the thing is, The thing is, though, I'm still trying to figure out as I watch him. I mean, why are they having difficulty with this guy? I mean, the guy's a good closer, although I was watching him in the Oklahoma, and again, game against Oklahoma City, didn't close out as well as he should have. But the thing is, I think he's a great closer, but somehow it's just something is not right there with these guys. I mean, but at the same time, I was watching the game against San Antonio there, and some of their bench players showed up in that game. So why is Jimmy Butler having that kind of difficulty meshing in with these guys? I mean, he's had some games, but just somehow it just is like a band that they all play well individually, but it's not necessarily on tune yet.
You got to take this into consideration. Jimmy's assists are up. His points are down. I think the point he averages about, 19 a game right now? 18 a game? I think he hasn't spent that little comparatively since his Bulls days. You've got a system where you've got a Joel Embiid who is listed as center, who's like a more improved self-aware Chris Webber.
Right.
Threes, block shots, rebound, cross you over, do a myriad of different things. Then you got a Ben Simmons, who's a 6'8 point guard, who doesn't have a jumper, who doesn't really need a jumper. I think that the perception that a point guard has to be a shooter is, to me, always been amazing, because I remember how people thought that point guards who shoot aren't fundamental, but that's a different story for a different day. You've got a lot of pieces. Is it his team? Is it Joel Embiid's team? Is it Simmons' team? You've got a coach in Brett Brown who, there's been rumors about he and Jimmy Butler not getting along, although I think that's very far-fetched. They were in a film session, they were arguing, it got out to the media, and people ran with it.
Right.
I think that, again, it's an adjustment period.
Right.
If you're married, for example, you may have dated your husband or your wife for many years, but living with them is a whole different concept.
That's true.
So I feel like that adjustment period and that analogy is still, in play with that. They're still figuring each other out. That's not a quick fix.
Wow. Well, and so that's and that's a situation that I think that if the Sixers if they can somehow get that together, and we got time until the playoffs. If they get that together, I think the Sixers are going to be a hard team to beat. I think at minimum they'll get to the semifinals of the Eastern Conference, and that's Final Four. If that Final Four goes the way I think it'll go, like if Toronto is the number one seed and Sixers are the fourth seed, and that is going to be probably, maybe that could be one of the best semifinal rounds that I think we'll have in the NBA playoffs, because all four of those teams are really, really good. All four of those teams can beat you. Like I said again the other day, I was more impressed with how the Sixers came back from an 8-point deficit. They went on a 10-0 run to win the game, and if they can bottle that effort, that's going to be a tough, a tough road game.
I'm going to say this to you. When you look at the Indiana Pacers without Victor Oladipo...
Yeah, man, he's out for the year. That makes a huge difference.
That's going to change some things in the standings, specifically as I look at the Washington Wizards and as I look at the Brooklyn Nets. The two hottest teams in the NBA's Eastern Conference right now, the Milwaukee Bucks, who sit at 35-12, have won 6 straight.
Mm-hmm.
They're in first place. And then you look at the Brooklyn Nets, who've also won 6 straight, and they're 27-23 in the 6th seed. Obviously, you look at the Miami Heat, you hope that they go to the playoffs because it's Dwayne Wade's last year.
Right.
But say Miami doesn't go, Charlotte's still going to be in the playoffs. The Wizards, who are in 9th place at 21-27, without John Wall, without Dwight Howard, I see those two teams making a serious run to much further up the standings. And then you look at potentially the Detroit Pistons, who are rumored, Andre Drummond is rumored to be in trade talks. They could add some pieces too.
Wow.
There's a lot of teams that are going to be interesting to watch. I see that the Bucks, the Raptors, and the Philadelphia 76ers being the top three teams in the NBA's Eastern Conference. And I see the Nets surging. The Nets have something to prove. Spencer Dinwiddie actually having surgery. But D'Angelo Russell proving why he is an all-star this season. I think the Nets are proving something, and they're going to go into free agency looking to attract some big names to come to the Big Apple as well. So the Nets have a lot going for them as well. But the three top teams, realistically, in the NBA's Eastern Conference in no particular order are the Milwaukee Bucks, the Toronto Raptors, the Sixers, and as well as the Boston Celtics. I think the Boston Celtics, who've won five straight and fifth seed, have been playing beneath their privilege all season because they're trying to figure things out. And I think that Kyrie Irving discussing his frustrations as the leader of that team and the whole conversation going on and all that stuff, he secretly threw those two players under the bus, but I think it got their attention. I think that the Boston Celtics are going to have a surge in the second half of this season as well. In the last 10 games, they're 7-3, and they're better at home at 19-5, away 11-13. But I think the Celtics will figure it out. Again, the Celtics and the Sixers are similar because they both have a bunch of guys who have had a ton of time playing with each other. You look at last season with Gordon Hayward being out. Mm-hmm. You look at Jason Tatum realizing who the heck he thought he was.
Right.
And how do you fit into that offense? You know, you have an all-star and Kyrie Irving who's, reasserting his role after being out, for the playoffs. You know, Terry Rozier, who was the point guard during the playoffs, and, him figuring out his role. But, the most consistent person on that Celtics team this season has really been Marcus Smart.
Right. Wow. So it's going to be fun to watch. All-Star game is next week, right? Or is it after the Super Bowl?
It's after the Super Bowl.
After the Super Bowl, okay. So I'm going to be really watching the NBA the second half of the season. The Super Bowl coming, I'm always at that point where when a football season, the Super Bowl goes on, I'm focused on football. But then after that, I'm back into basketball, both college and pro. So we'll see how it goes. Can Kawhi Leonard and them, final question before I go to break, can they get to the NBA final? Can they assert themselves now that LeBron's out of the East? Can they assert themselves again?
Yeah, the Raptors are definitely a team that is a threat to go to the finals, and it's not just because Kawhi's there and LeBron is out. They added Danny Green, who was a steal in that trade. And Nick Nurse is still a part of that original nucleus of that original that coaching staff before him. He recommended that offense, which came highly recommended. A lot of teams went with him, and we're looking at the next best assistant who runs some things in the NBA. And the thought of a potential non-American team going to the finals, potentially winning it, is just history.
Right. Okay. Well, Brandon, as always, thank you, as always, for getting, for being with us today. I wish I could give you a gift certificate someplace, but I work at the station, so anyway, no, but thank you for being with us today, man.
Lunch on you.
That's right. Lunch on me. I got you. I got you on that. All right. Lunch, and also somebody else, a sandwich, so, but lunch on you, man. I mean, lunch on me, man. Lunch on me. Thank you for being here today, man.
My man. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got to go to break. So you're listening to 96.1 FM WRD and 900 AM WRD Black Talk Media. The Chris Murray Report will be right back.
Independence is a precious thing, but now and then everyone needs a little help. Isn't it good to know that getting the help you need doesn't mean drastically changing your life? Always Best Care Philly and Delaware is there to give you just the amount of help you need, from a few hours a week to as many hours as you need, handling everything from light housekeeping to meals, and so much more. Don't struggle. Contact Always Best Care and see how easy it is to age in place. Call us at 302-409-3710 or visit alwaysbestcaredelaware.com.
Listen to Laborers Live.
We created the weekend. We created the 40-hour work week. We just want enough to feed our family, be able to send our children to college, and let our next generation do better than we did.
To people that might have forgot how important unionism is in a country like the United States. People now infringing on our 8-hour work day, trying to work people more than 8 hours without overtime, trying to work people without benefits. In the long run, everybody's getting a fat paycheck except the worker. So this is really a wake-up call for America.
The struggle is continuous. Tune in to Laborers Live every Friday Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. Sponsored by LESSIT, the Laborers Employers Cooperation Education Trust of the Laborers District Council of Philadelphia and Vicinity.
Local 332, Sam Staten Jr. Business Manager. Local 57, Esteban Vera Business Manager. Local 135, Dan Woodall Jr. Business Manager. Local 413, James Harper Jr. Business Manager. The Laborers District Council, Ryan Boyer Business Manager. And Tony Staten, Executive Director of LESSIT.
Gentrification. It's a topic that affects thousands across the city, and we're talking about it. Word Radio invites you to the next installment of the Walter P. Lomax Jr. MD Speaker Series presents Word Speaks, Standing Our Ground, Gentrification and the Future of Black Philly. Friday, February 1st from 5 p.m. till 7 p.m. at the Barnes Foundation, 2025 Benjamin Franklin Parkway. Join moderator Eric Brother Shamari Grimes as he navigates this timely panel discussion featuring Dr. Mendy Fullilove, Professor of Urban Policy and Health at the New School, Ann Fadalan, Director of Planning and Development for the City of Philadelphia, Angelo Perriman, CEO of Perriman Building and Construction Services, and Tommy Joshua of the North Philly Peace Park. The panel will tackle the mental, physical, and spiritual impact of gentrification and strategies to survive it. Immediately following the panel, attendees are invited to participate in the Barnes' First Friday festivities, featuring a special presentation called Dear Philadelphia, which uses art and poetry to explore gentrification and inequality. This event is sold out. However, visit wordradio.com to join our waiting list. Remember, even if you RSVP, please plan to arrive at 5 p.m. when the doors open. If you do not arrive by 5:45, your seat will not be guaranteed. To accommodate those who cannot attend, the panel will be broadcasted live. Presented in partnership with the Barnes Foundation and sponsored by PICO and Moravia Health.
Since 1904, Philly's top sandwich pros and homemakers have always started the exact same way, with those legendary Amoroso's rolls baked fresh daily. Word family, put Amoroso's rolls on your shopping list for your kids' school lunches and your next family gathering. Want to make your very best sandwiches? Always start with the very best sandwich rolls. Pick them up today at your favorite supermarket or food store. Amoroso's, why Philly's sandwiches are world famous.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD, independent black media.
Ah, yes, the world and earth, third from the sun of a gun. 360 degrees, and as new worlds emerge, stay alert, stay aware, watch the eagle, watch the bear. Earthquake and foundation shaking, bias breaking, new day making change. Accumulating, liberating, educating, stimulating change. Tomorrow was born yesterday. From inside the rib or the people cage, the era of our first blood stage was blotted or erased or TV screened and defaced. Remember, there's a revolution going on in the world. One blood of early morning revolved to the one idea of our tomorrow. Homeboy, hold on. Now more than ever, all the family must come together. Ideas of freedom and harmony, great civilization. Yesterday brought today will bring tomorrow.
Okay, we are back. In about a few minutes, we're going to be talking to our tennis experts about the Australia Open, which in the women's final, Naomi Osaka has finally won. And this time, there is no... There's no Serena. She just beat Petra Kvitova, and she won that match. And it's about wow, it was a gutted out 3-set match. She won 7-6, 5-7, 6-4, and this time she's getting the moment where the spotlight is all on her. She is the best player probably in the world at this point. You know, Naomi Osaka, who is of Haitian heritage and Japanese heritage, basically is becoming what Serena is right now. Though Serena is the greatest of all time, Naomi Osaka has the is the up and coming superstar in this tournament. Even though Serena Williams, she had a tough time. She in the third set had a 5-1 lead, and I think had a couple of match points, and just somehow fell apart. We'll talk about that with our experts on tennis. Now, good to see Black Girl Magic, you know, rearing its head again and coming up, and just seeing the sisters win. It's good to see another woman of African descent, win in tennis. But we also had a black male, Francis Tiafoe, kid out of Hydesville, Maryland, and he got as far as the quarterfinals, which is his best run as an 18-year-old tennis player. He got to the quarterfinals, lost to the great Rafael Nadal, and lost in three sets. Was competitive, but Nadal, as you can see, is one of the all-time greats that ever played this game and ever played that sport. And so it's good to see, and I'm kind of going to devote my last half hour to talking about tennis. These are the so-called rich people sports that black Americans seem to, you know, not be in all the way. But the thing is that we are starting to make inroads into those non-traditional sports. It's always good to see that. And it's always good to see kids like Francis Tiafoe, who's 18 years old, and he's starting to make his way up in terms of male tennis. And you would think a lot, if a lot of us could be as affluent, and that's hard for a lot of African Americans to be in that sport, because it's an expensive sport. I mean, you really have to have the money and the backing behind you in order to succeed. But when you have it, like people like Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys, and you know, some of the Williams sisters, they've, you know, like I said, when all things are equal and you have the opportunity to get in and play the sport, then, you know, there's no doubt that a lot of our kids can succeed if they have the money, if they have the backing in order to do well in that sport. And that's where, because like I say again, tennis is one of those sports, athleticism means something, speed, being smart, and all those other things. All the things mean something in that sport. And so it's good. It is often good to see, which is why I make, you know, great pains to talk about sort of the Serena Williamses of the world, Naomi Osaka. I don't mind having that on my show. You know, you're not going to see this on some of the other sports talk stations in this area, because, you know, we still have a thing against women in sports. And so we have on the line with us Vijay Freeman and Marlisa Lawrence Corbett. Vijay Freeman, who is the editor of blacktennismagazine.com, and Marlisa Lawrence Corbett, who's written for a number of publications on tennis, who I kind of forgot right now, but both of these people will probably have forgotten more tennis than I'll ever know. So guys, welcome to the show today.
Good to see you, Chris.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I gotta ask. I'm gonna start. First of all, I gotta say, let's talk about Naomi Osaka. I didn't get to see the match this morning. It was at 3:00 in the morning, but I didn't get to see that match. How does she look today? I mean, that was a tough three set win. She went to a tiebreak in that first set. How tough was it for her today, and how well did she play today? But any of y'all can take that.
Well, I did watch the match, and it was up and down because she was pretty much in control for most of the match, and then she was up 5-2 or 5-3 serving for the set, and just kind of had a meltdown, an emotional meltdown, and ended up losing that second set. Went into the locker room, or went out with the towel for her head. She was so distraught.
Wow.
Then she came back in, and what was funny to me was to hear the commentators talking about, they used the term flatline. She looked flatline, her face, and it's like they expect her to show a certain type of emotion when she was doing what she was supposed to do, getting herself together, not showing emotion, and just getting it, you know, going back within herself, and that showed a maturity that she didn't used to have, and so that's how she was able to weather the storm. I mean, she's not playing anybody. She was playing a two-time Wimbledon champion who's 28 years old. So I thought it was even more impressive had she just won in straight sets, that she was able to weather that storm, calm herself down, and go back out there and close out the match.
Yeah. I was going to put it over to you, VJ. How much, and Marlise, I guess you can jump on this too. How much is that a function? Because she's young. I mean, I mean, there are a lot of young tennis players, but she's what, 18, 19 now? How much is 21. That? Huh?
She's 21.
Oh, she's 21. Well, I mean, even still, though, I don't know if that's middle-aged in tennis, but how much is this just maybe youth experience, you know, just learning how to play in those types of, on that type of form?
But playing at that level, that's just her approach. I mean, I got a chance to speak with her last year when she won the BNP Open out here on the West Coast. You know, she doesn't show much emotion at all, really. I mean, in certain instances, I guess she's kind of be down on herself here and there and things like that. But, you know, when she wins, you know, you can tell that, you know, she's a little shy and reserved. But in the finals later on today, I hope that, you know, she's able to bring it together. But, you know, it won't be easy, but I think she'll come out on top.
Okay. Well, yeah, she, like I said, again, you know, going through that today, that's a three set final in the women's, or five, whenever you go to the maximum amount of set, there's that emotional up and down, you know, that whole thing where, you know, you doubt yourself, then you come back and all those other things. And so, but that's what you have to go through, especially when you start playing at a level at that high level.
Right. And she's the first woman to back up her maiden Grand Slam win since Capriati. So that's been a while. Even Serena didn't back up her first slam. She's also the first woman to win back-to-back slams since Serena. So she's breaking, you know, she's up there with some Hall of Famers now. She's in that class with a lot of Hall of Famers. And, you know, Serena having 23 Grand Slams, I kept thinking, well, because they start later, who could catch her? Well, it depends. Naomi stays at this pace. Because remember, Serena took a lot of time off. And it just depends on the competition. Now, she's going into the French. That's not one of her great things. Maybe she can learn. Maybe she can get better at that. But for right now, she's the number one player in the world.
Right.
Yeah, well, I believe, I think if she wins this match, she's number one. I don't know. I guess she might be number one now, but I know. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, she is number one come Monday.
Yeah, she won.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, okay. Well, definitely, you know, actually, that's an added pressure, too, of being number one. So, you know, we'll have to see how she handles being number one, considering how reserved she is and all that. But I think she'll come out just fine.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Now I want to go back to a couple of people. Serena, up 5-1. That's the one I saw bits and pieces of that match. Up 5-1 in the final set. What, from your perspective, what happened?
Her ankle. It was simple as day. I was watching it live. The guy called the football on match point, which, you know, again, that only happens to Serena.
Right.
But, you know, if people say, well, it was a football, I'm like, but you just don't hear them calling that at match point.
Right.
At slams against other people. But that kind of threw her off. But what really, when she rolled her ankle, she stopped, touched it. Then, you know how you take that first step after you injure yourself? She wobbled. Like, she couldn't even hold herself up. And even though people say, well, players, I heard somebody say, well, NBA players play through ankles. I said, but her biggest weapon is her serve.
Right.
And she didn't win another point on her serve. She lost 10 points on her serve. She didn't show. Serena was not nervous. She was cruising. She rolled her ankle. And then people are like, why didn't she call the trainer? At 5-1 in the third set, her mindset is just not to. And with an ankle, what are you going to do? It's going to get stiffer. What can a trainer do at that point? And she said it. Give Pliskova credit, she stepped up her game during the match. Even Pliskova said, I noticed Serena was getting kind of shaky. She didn't know about the rolled ankle. She just noticed Serena wasn't playing like she had been playing. Serena's trying to be graceful because, you know, she's damned if she does, if she does, and saying it wasn't an ankle.
Right.
She clearly, you need, she lands on that ankle when she serves, and she goes up pretty high for a serve. And she could no longer push off on it the way she had been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uncharacteristic. I don't care if Serena's choking, whatever. For her to lose 10 points on her serve, you know something ain't right. That was not choking.
She right.
Straight up rolled her ankle, and that's that. It was unlucky. I don't know if she was distracted because of the football call, because it came right in that point.
Right.
But either way, it was totally, I don't even feel like she collapsed. I think a part of her was thinking, even the commentator said when they thought she would win it, okay, maybe she pulls this out, but what about tomorrow? Because remember, they had to come back the next day.
Right.
How can she play on that ankle? And so I was thinking, you know, I think the tears you saw, people thought, oh, it's because she collapsed. I'm like, Serena looked to be in serious pain after that. And I think that's why she didn't seem so upset. Because when you know you've done the best you could do and there was nothing you could do about that, you're not as hard on yourself as like she was at that U.S. Open when she choked against Vinci. That's like, oh, I choked. That's harder to get over than, hey, I rolled my ankle. I couldn't move. I played through the pain. I did the best I could. You heard her kept saying, I did everything I could do. I did nothing wrong.
Right. And when you hurt yourself like that, I mean, I still, you know, I still have images of Isaiah Thomas hitting a 3-point bucket on a broken ankle. He was no good after that and after the next day, and that was a concern. So she did the best she could. I got to go to break because I'm going to ask you, because we're going to talk about get both of you guys to talk about Francis Tiafoe and what his future looks like. So you're listening to 96.1 FM and 900 AM WRD Black Talk. Me, the Chris Murray Report, will be right back.
Family Therapy Vignette Moments with Dr. Lucille Ijoy. Well, now, it's right here in our faces, the new year. As a family therapist, I would like to share my mission statement, the thing that is always on my mind. Don't bully or spank your children or young people. It causes violence in the world. Hitting children is not in the Bible. Besides, they may harbor anger and use this method of solving problems with other young people. They may hold on to these painful memories for years. They also may decide that a gun or a knife is a good way to get revenge, even with a family member. They may decide to rob someone to settle a score in their minds or hearts. Now, who will be responsible for that hatred, pent-up anger in families and the community? God forbid. What is your mission statement? What is on your mind for the new year?
1 in 3 adults in America have pre-diabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD, independent black media.
Okay, we're back. I wanted to end our conversation on Serena before we talked about Francis Tiafoe by looking at how well Serena played in this Australian Open. And both VJ, you and Marlisa can both take turns answering this question. But looking at how before the injury and all that, how well does Serena look? I saw her in the Simona Halep match. I thought she was for the most part, she did well. She had trouble in that second set because, you know, Simona Halep was the number one player in the world. But how is she looking moving forward to the rest of this year?
I think Serena looked amazing coming into the Australian Open, and even on top of that, I mean, she looked good coming in. Like Marlisa was saying, I mean, that, you know, the ankle sprain, and I thought, you know, it was also a some distraction there too. Obviously, some of the mental game kind of kicked in. It was also issues in other areas there that we couldn't see. But, I think, you know, she's been playing well up until now. I think she'll get some rest. I don't think it was a broken ankle. I don't think he was even, you know, sprained. I think her recovery should be fine. And I think her best chance for 24 is Wimbledon because that surface, fits her game. I think that's where she's won most of her titles.
What about you, Marlise? Let me ask you this before you answer that question. She's at 23 Grand Slams. Does she have to win a 24th and possibly maybe a 25th to really validate her greatness? My gut says no.
No, because first of all, she already has the record for the Open era. That's the one that counts.
Right.
They keep moving the goalposts, but nobody thinks that Margaret Court is the greatest player ever.
Right.
I think it would help solidify, even if she ties 24, the thing that Serena, you know, she's playing a limited schedule. She's just going to have to balance playing enough to be in the Grand Slams without tiring herself out. Because if you don't play enough, you fall too far in the rankings, and that's what was hurting her. Even being seated at 16, that meant she was going to run up against top players in the fourth round. And that's what's going to knock you out. Now that she's number 11, and I know a lot of people make a big deal out of Naomi going from 72 to number 1, I'm like, Serena was ranked outside of 500 this last year.
Right.
She's up to 11. So I think, and it's weird because Wimbledon is her best tournament, but that's also a very fast tournament. And, we got a lot of big hitters. I think the French Open, if she's healthy, because so few of these women, the ones who can play well on clay, don't have enough weapons. And the ones who have the weapons can't play on clay. And the clay will slow down someone like Naomi. All of a sudden, Serena can slide into that shot, defend that shot. So I think if she's healthy, and that's a big if, she's at Hammer Hill, I think the French might be a better shot for her than Wimbledon. Even though she's dominated at Wimbledon, she's only won 3 French Opens, but she's been in 4 French Open finals.
Right.
And she loves clay, and she knows how to play on clay. And I don't see any of the top players, the Kvitovas, Halo's pretty good on clay, but she's got to defend the title, pressure's on her. I don't see Osaka doesn't move well on. She don't even like coming to the net.
Wow.
And so I think the French could be a surprise for Serena because it takes the pressure off. It's way more forgiving on ankles. It's more of a grind, but that allows her, just like Sharapova, who's not a good mover, was able to take 2 French Opens late in her career because it allowed her to get the balls that she normally couldn't chase down. So these young kids who are hitting these winners, well, all of a sudden, you know, that clay is going to neutralize some of Naomi's speed. And if Naomi doesn't know how to slide on the clay and doesn't feel as comfortable on the clay, I think advantage Serena, who's very comfortable on clay.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to go over to the men's side. In terms of African-American players, Francis Tiafoe, and really, in terms of American players, because by the time they got to the quarterfinal of the men's, he's the last American standing. Is he the great hope Is he the great hope of American tennis somehow? I mean, what's his upside? VJ, I'm going to start with you, and then Melissa, you come back.
Yeah, I really like Tiafoe. I've been following him ever since he started, his career seriously about 3 or 4 years ago. He's always been able to beat some top players. He has a ton of talent. His biggest weapon, I think, is his strength, his power, athletic ability. A lot of the tennis heads or the real, more of the seasoned players notice that his technique is way off, if you will. And he has great days, and then he'll have not so great days. And I think at the end of the day, his technique is what's going to bog him down. And like you saw with against Nadal, I mean, Nadal's on fire, but he didn't really have an answer. I guess Nadal didn't really, have a great day in particular. But I think he will be a contender. I think he'll win a couple ATP 250s and things like that. But I don't think he'll be able to win a Grand Slam, at least not yet, just due to, his technique.
Okay. And Marlisa, what do you think of Tiafoe? What do you see? What is his potential? Can he be in that same air as Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Djokovic, and all those other guys?
Well, that's asking a lot, because even David Ferrer, who's one of the greatest players to ever win a slam, is not in that group. Yeah, I agree with Vijay that he has an unorthodox, not just techniques, his grips and everything, and his movement is great. He can, his ground strokes are vicious. But I think what helped him this time was the Hopman Cup. Him and Tsitsipas, they played in there. And I think when you're young, you want to play the best, but you don't get as many reps because you usually don't make it to those later rounds.
Right.
Or you get knocked out in the first round. But playing something like the Hoffman Cup, that assured him of a matches against Federer, against some of the top players, and playing them in doubles. So he got to see the Federer serve quite a bit. He got to play against Tsitsipas. And people kind of made light of it. But I'm like, look at all those kids who played in that Hoffman Cup and how far they went in the tournament.
Right.
And not just on the men's side, on the women's side, too. So I think I would recommend he play some doubles.
Right.
Because he was horrible at first in the Hopman Cup with Serena, but as he went on, he got better at the net. And, I know it's taxing, but I think, maybe he ought to, try to get in some doubles so he can get better at the net. Because he's going to have to come in to do any damage against some of these really steady baseliners like a Djokovic or Nadal. These people are so solid from the baseline. And so he's going to have to do something else and rely on his youth. That's what he has over them now. Rely on his youth, the movement. You see Tsitsipas, he beat Federer coming into the net. That's how he beat Federer.
Right.
You got to, come in. And right now that's a weak part of his game. He does live out here in Orlando where we have the national headquarters, and they do have European red clay. So we'll see how he does at the French, if he takes advantage of that now that he lives out there. But, he's already the number two ranked American, and he's the top ranked African black man right now, because Tsonga and Monfils are kind of struggling.
Yeah.
So Tiafoe's number one right now. He's going to, on Monday, he'll be at a career high, I think, 30.
Right.
That's already further than Donald Young ever got.
Wow.
Donald Young was never ranked that high.
Well, Melissa, do you think he would get Tiafoe will get a major title win?
I just don't see him winning the slams. Too much would have to break it, because it's not just what he's doing. I'm looking at the class that's coming up with him, the Zeras, the Berna course. They have way more weapons in their games. Dominic Thiem, their games are so much more well-rounded. So it's like you got to beat the competition that's there, because Roddick was a great player. Tsonga, amazing player, never won anything. It's like it's the class you come up with. And I'm like, I don't see him getting through 2 weeks against that class that's coming up with him with all the weapons they have.
Wow. So what you're saying, what both of you seem to be saying, the game has to evolve. I mean, it seems like a lot of times, you know, a lot of some players don't have certain things. I remember maybe Martina Navratilova back and they didn't have certain things when she started off. But games have to, I guess the game has to evolve. Are there any other amongst black males in terms of the in the pipeline of great players? Can y'all, we got about 2 minutes left. Can you all point to anybody else that might be coming up, might be coming up in the future that we ought to be looking at maybe years down the line?
Yeah, Felix out of Canada he looked really good last year. You know, he had a couple really good wins and things like that, but it hasn't been consistent so far this year. He actually lost to Chris Eubanks, who's another black male out of America. Eubanks has made great strides. He's actually in a tournament out here, the Oracle Series out here in Newport. But, I would say Felix out of Canada has the biggest upside as of right now.
And he's very young, yeah. He definitely has, to me, a better upside because he's still so young. Tiafoe's at that age where you need to start making a move.
Right.
And he has. He's made a move. But I'm saying the class he's in right now, that's so competitive. And they're not making the move from under him. They're all ranked above him.
Wow.
The people his age, they're all ranked above him. So they're getting the experience. Somebody like, Zverev has already, beaten these top players, beaten Nadal and stuff. You know, they've already done that. And so he's with that crop. That's the only thing with Tiafoe. I mean, you can never say never because you can improve your game. It's just right now he's with a crop of some seriously talented. I mean, and I think he's like 6'1", and these guys are like 6'6", 6'5", and they're moving like that.
Wow.
You know, they're pretty nimble, giants. So he's going up against some serious physical talent right there.
And ladies and gentlemen, and I'm happy to say on a sports talk radio station that I can say ladies and gentlemen, I got to bring this to an end. Marlisa Lawrence Corbett, thank you so much. Where can we find your work?
You can actually find some of it on blacktennismagazine.com and, of course, TennisView Magazine.
Okay. And, of course, VJ, blacktennismagazine.com.
Yes, sir. Oops. Yes, sir. We'll have our annual subscription coming out the next couple weeks there for 2018. So look forward to that.
Okay. Look forward to reading you guys. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the end. I want to thank all my guests today, and I want to thank all everybody who called in earlier today. We will see you guys next week, so you all be safe and have a good week. This is the Chris Murray Report on WURD. We'll see you next week. Get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a sex machine, get on up.
The law offices of Rhonda Hill Wilson have been fighting for the rights of injured individuals and medical negligence in nursing homes for 25 years. Rhonda Hill Wilson will guide you through the often complicated and confusing legal process to help you obtain a fair outcome for you and your loved ones. The office is located at 1500 JFK Boulevard, Suite 820 in Center City. For more information, call 215-972-0400. Check out the website, rhwilson.com.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans, but in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm,
Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
The big game is set.
Burkhead to the end zone. Hello, Super Bowl, New England. Rams win it. And on to Super Bowl they go.
And Word Radio wants you to party like a champion. That's right. We're teaming up with Brown's Family ShopRite to present our fourth annual Big Game Hoagie Making Contest. Friday, February 1st from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Brown's Family ShopRite of Island Avenue, located at 2946 Island Avenue. We're stacking the field with a live broadcast hoagie making contest featuring community groups using only the best ingredients from our family business partners, Dietz & Watson, Amoroso's, Hers, and Canada Dry. All your favorite Word personalities on site and your host for the festivities, none other than the rapping professor, Dr. Aaron Smith. Be in the building and you could win a big game party for 10.
Literally just for signing up.
You don't want to miss the 4th annual Word Radio Big Game Hoagie Making Contest. Friday, February 1st, beginning at 10 a.m. at Brown's Family ShopRite of Island Avenue, 2946